brother. What's up?
This is a new recording, man.
Yeah, brother, like, stop right on.
Good morning and welcome to the new Earl Ingram Show at 5:40 a.m. WAUK 101 FM, The Shaw. You can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And boy, do we have a great guest lined up for you this morning. Those of you who have followed me for a little while know one of the best guests that I've ever had, guy named Professor Bob Harvey, who was in Milwaukee, and we had great relationships. I've had him on everywhere I've gone, and there's no better professor than Professor Bob Harvey. I am delighted once again to have Professor Bob Harvey back on the airways. As many of you who have followed me know of the greatness of Professor Bob Harvey. He's in sunny Charlotte, North Carolina. I don't know how sunny it is today, but that's where he is. Professor Bob Harvey, thank you for gracing our airways again. How you doing, my friend?
Fine, you, Earl. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, man. How is the weather down there this time of the year?
Well, it's cold. You know, it's you know, for me, anything below 70 is cold. even though I spent over 30-some years in Wisconsin, it was always cold. You know, so and the temperature very rarely got above 70 for no more than say 6 weeks out of a year. So even down here, as I'm getting older now, and blood is thinning out. You know, anything below 70, I put on thermal. that's what I'm doing right now. So it is cool here now. You know, and it's overcast. And we get the cold fronts coming in over the mountains. So, yeah, it's cold. And see, the thing about it is the cold down here is a little different than up there, because see, down here it's damp.
Right.
And it soaks through your bones like, man, see, up there's a lot of dry cold. Down here it's that damp cold. And that just adds to the misery. So,
I think we Wisconsinites are laughing right now to hear you say, you know, anything under 70 degrees. But anyway.
Right. They can laugh all they want. I don't care. I mean, cold is cold to me. That's the way I look at it. So.
And that's the reason you got out of here. One of the reasons.
That's the reason I left, isn't it? Yep, that is the reason.
Let's do this, Professor Harvey. So much to talk about. It's been a while. But I've been, from the first time I heard critical race theory and struggled with what I was hearing people trying to explain it on these dang blasted talk shows on television, on radio. They certainly confuse a lot of people with critical race theory. Can you give us an explanation on what it is and why it bubbled to the surface now?
Well, critical race theory in the United States, and I'd see that because this concept of critical thinking is something that that was started in Europe in the 19th century with people like Immanuel Kant and others. In the 1970s, led by people like Derrick Bell, at Harvard and other scholars, they started this intellectual movement to critically look at why the civil rights movement was failing, the King's dream and the whole bit. And they began to analyze the concept of critical race theory. And it was really aimed at the liberals who were pushing the agenda along with Dr. King and others, and they were counting on the goodness and the conscience of people to make the changes. And they found out that no matter how they did it, things still remain, you know, largely the same. You know, a few little progressive things here or there, but continued institutional racism was there. And King saw it in the last years of his life when he finally started going up north. And he said he saw more hatred in the faces of whites in Chicago and then around Cicero in that area, New York, Boston, New Jersey. He saw the level of racism there, the likes of which he had never seen before, and he was badly shaken. I remember, Earl, in 1974, when I had the pleasure of escorting Daddy King to the Raleigh-Durham Airport. He had come to North Carolina Central to deliver a Founders Day speech, and I was tasked with the idea with the enviable opportunity to drive him back to the airport, and it was about a 25 minute drive going down to the Raleigh-Durham Airport, and he and I had a chance to talk. I was sitting in the front driving, and he was sitting next to me, and this old Baptist preacher, and he talked about how his son in his last days was really disillusioned because he thought that being down south, that was the worst kind of racism. But when he got up north, that's when he really saw it. And it disillusioned him because all the things that he had talked about, including his I Have a Dream speech, all of that, meant that there was still so far to go. And there were so many more things to do to solve the problem. And what Derek Bell and others that pushed the critical race theory would say is that this thing is institutional. And see, one of the things that I've always believed about racism is that racism, by definition, and the way it's practiced in this country, is the belief in the practice that one race of people are inherently superior to another. And that can be both physical and biological and intellectual, however you want to see it. But that's the essence of racism, the way it's been practiced in this country. And so when you look at racism from that standpoint, racism exists in three dimensions. And I always used to teach my students that. Wherever I taught, I always told them that you must look at racism through three prisms. One, the individual. Racism, that belief in that practice, you have to believe it and practice it as an individual. The next level is societal or communal. And that's where you live in a society where people who think alike like you do, and they form organizations like the Ku Klux Klan, the neo-Nazis, the skinheads, the white Christian nationalists, the Posse Comitatus, any of those extremist groups, you have to have those groups to reinforce what you believe. And we find those kind of communities all over, even in some law enforcement, police departments. You have that part of that blue code. You know, they practice that. The next level is the most dangerous of racism, and that is institutional racism, because it's there where laws and policies are passed. And that's the area that Derek Bell and the other critical race theorists were talking about, that the reason why King and those people were so frustrated in the end is because this stuff is institutionalized. In every state, you had laws. Now, those laws, look at Milwaukee, for example. Milwaukee was considered at one time to be one of the most segregated communities in America for a long time.
Still is.
And when I worked down at City Hall, that was one of the things you always had people, you know, suddenly talking about when they had true conversations about it, Milwaukee being a segregated city. But I always responded, even sometimes to the alderman at great peril to myself, my response was, you know, people don't segregate just by a natural habitat. This thing happens because there are laws that enable people to practice what they're doing. And so when it's institutional, even if people try to change, and I'm talking now the majority population, white Americans, white Milwaukeeans, whoever they are, whenever they decide that they want to change, to make things for the better, they run into some of the same walls and some of the same problems that black folk who are struggling run into. Now, and the abolitionists found that out. Those young people up there in Pewaukee, those young white kids that were gunned down by that little white terrorist, they found it out. The young lady at Charlottesville, she found it out. You know, it's there. And that's what critical race theory is all about, that this stuff is institutional. And that a lot of the social constructs that we use, the margin, the demonstrating, and the whole bit, that battle is important. But what's more important is we must now get at the institutional level.
So Professor Harvey, right, before you go any further, we're getting ready to go to a break, but I just wanted to ask you, I remember Dr. King saying something to the effect that you can't, and people said you can't legislate people's hearts. You can't force people to not be racist. But then Dr. King's retort was, yeah, but you can legislate and stop people from hanging you. So, you know, there are people who will say that you can't force people to, you know, to change the way they feel.
No, you can't. But see, the thing you got to understand is this, that as long as you have the laws on the books, for example, a good example of that is the 13th, 14th Amendments. Congress passed that norm by just by two votes, basically with the abolitioning of slavery with the 13th Amendment. But the one thing that it did do was by law, it got rid of, you know, the old situation of slavery. Now, there are ways around it, because if you read the 13th Amendment carefully, it talks about involuntary servitude, you know, that you can't have that anymore unless a person commits a crime. And so the Jim Crow laws got all around that. The 14th Amendment, if you read it carefully, deals with four things. One of them is giving people the right, giving the black men the right to vote in federal elections. But Southern whites found a way to get around it by passing, you know, a law saying, you know, we're going to close the polls, or we're not going to let you vote in local elections. So you automatically eliminate that.
So, Professor Harvey, hold that thought. Professor Harvey, hold that thought. We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. Again, 844-967-2789. Professor Harvey is back. All things are right and good now on the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be back.